The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly, age-old quest for Tim Pot grinds step closer to annual conclusion. We round up the mud, the misses and the injuries of the fourth round, like in Everton Stevenage, where Oviedo gets bust, and this time not even Dr. Sid can stop it. Then out of the way cup competition, for here comes the Premier League, swaggering back with mighty midweek action. Boom! The Merseyside derby. Biff! Spurs Man City. 6-0 when they last met, remember. And boff! Cardiff at Man United. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer back home. And Juan Mata fresh off his chopper. We do all the usual business, looking forward to that. Get your thoughts and then check out the rest of Europe too. Italy, Germany, France and Spain in today's Football Weekly. Hey, we're back. And look who's here today. It's Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. You had an early start today, didn't you, with the rumour mill?
Yeah.
Looking forward to hearing about that later on.
Good, good.
Jacob Steinbeck.
Hello.
Just back from Bournemouth.
Yeah, just back, given right. There were trees on the track.
Were there?
Yeah. Mm. Two rail replacement buses. And
wow.
Oh, I know, what a heroic journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, John Ashton, you're back as well.
Yeah, I was going to complain about my journey because I came home from Sheffield via Doncaster and Stevenage, but I was on a train all the way at least.
That's right, listeners. He was at that famous Sheffield United Fulham game. That's very exciting. So there's a little bit of you went out there front line and saw FA Cup action up close, face to face. Yeah,
salt of the earth.
You breathed in the atmosphere of the fourth round. And what did it smell and taste like, John?
In Sheffield,
yeah.
it smelled of cold and wet in the main.
Right.
I made the mistake of wearing a pair of canvas shoes for quite a wet.
You've been in London too long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a wet trip to South Yorkshire. And so my feet were freezing throughout. It was good fun, though. The United game was proper rain, mud, you know, squelchy tackles and all right. The rest of it. It was great.
Right. Nearly didn't go ahead, actually. Andre Mariner, the referee, had to do a couple of pitch inspections, and they had a man out there prodding the sward with a fork beforehand, and he single-handedly saved the day.
Right, okay, and they'll have the opportunity to do it all over again, because it finished 1-1, largely thanks to Darren Bent.
Yeah.
How bad was the miss? Because I didn't see it.
Well, it was an awful miss. He didn't even make the starting 11.
All right. Was he on his own in front of the goal with everyone else gone home or what?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. So he was brought on with half an hour to go.
Right.
And Fulham, it was 1-1 at this point, and with about 5 minutes left, Pachim Kasami headed across goal. It was sort of half cleared off the line, and it fell to Darren Bent 2 yards out at the back post. It wasn't on the deck, in fairness to him. It was perhaps a foot off the ground, but he just side-footed it pathetically wide with the whole of the goal to aim at, and forced a replay on his own.
Harry Redknapp's wife would have scored that one, probably.
I would imagine so, yeah.
All right, then. Now, another FA Cup news. Jacob, as I say, you went to the Bournemouth-Liverpool spectacular.
Yeah, it was spectacular.
Was it?
No. It was decent, though.
Was there a spectacular game out in FA Cup land this weekend? Watford-Man City? Or Man City-Watford, rather?
Well, it looked like it might be spectacular for a while. Watford went 2-0 up, but Manchester City, with sort of grim inevitability, ended up crushing them.
Pellegrini had a bit of a go at, well, he didn't specifically say Richards and Rodwell, but he took them off and complained that some of his players, he said, you can't play football jogging.
He said if he could, he would have made 11 changes
right.
At half-time. But they were still losing with about 15 minutes to go, City, so almost, you know, probably the biggest shock for a long time.
Mm. Had it happened.
Maybe since Wigan beat them in the cup final last season.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a measure of how sort of flat the whole FA Cup was this weekend, that was the main story, Manchester City almost losing.
Right. Today's papers are all about what's going to happen in the next round, where we're doing away with all that minnow interest and going with rating-stastic top four clashes as Arsenal take on Liverpool and very much Man City host Chelsea for the second time in 2 weeks because they've got to go there in the league, etc. and so on. Well, let's start talking a little bit, because the other big thing in Monday's papers is the return of the Premier League.
and Liverpool Everton on Tuesday night. What a way to get that one going. Both teams successful. You saw Liverpool down at Bournemouth. Everton, meanwhile, they had a 4-0 win against Stevenage. But how did Liverpool appear to you down at Bournemouth?
They were quite shaky for the first, much of the first half, actually. And Bournemouth, to their credit, played very well. Their problem was just that they were trying probably too much to score the perfect goal at times. And I was thinking to myself, just at a moment when a Bournemouth attack broke down after about 20 minutes, when they had all these attacks and never really been able to get a shot away, cut from a couple of sort of half chances here and there, I just thought to myself, you know, the difference between these two sides is going to be the fact that Liverpool were probably just going to shoot when they do get the opportunity. And they went right up the other end. Suarez passed it to Victor Moses, who cut inside and did shoot, scored from the edge of the area. And that was pretty much Liverpool's first shot on goal, and they scored. From there, Bournemouth carried on pressing and had almost equalised. But, you know, it was just the difference in between the two sides up front, where Bournemouth had Lewis Grabban up front and Liverpool had Luis Suarez and Daniel Sturridge. So, you know, it's quite a gulf in class. But it was a different kind of game to the Oldham game last year, because Oldham were much more physical. And you remember the goals that Matt Smith scored, you know, bundling them in from close range, and whereas probably Bournemouth played more of a thinking, passing game. But Liverpool still had to stand up to it. And, you know, afterwards Jordan Henderson was saying, "We think we've probably matured mentally in the last year or so. We've got more of a winning mentality." And, you know, and Roger said, you know, this is the kind of game that we maybe might have lost last year, which indeed they did. Mm. And, you know, they're professional and ruthless, which we haven't necessarily seen from Liverpool so much in the last couple of years.
Interesting. Well, this is going to be a real test of that winning mentality and ruthlessness as they go up against Everton. And a lot of people talking about their problems at the back.
And problems all over the pitch, really, because they've... I mean, it's a shame, really, because the game at Goodison Park was the game of the season, really, when it could have ended up anything.
3-3.
3-3, and it could have been any score, really, the amount of chances that both sides have. But they've both got so many injuries to... key players, and Liverpool, they were training with something like 14 or 15 players last week, first team players, and Joe Allen was out on the weekend, another one who dropped, and Rodgers said that he might be able to play him, but again, if he does, he might exacerbate the problem that he's got. You know, that means that Liverpool might end up just having two central midfielders fit, Gerrard and Henderson, and we know what happened with Gerrard when he played in central midfield against Aston Villa.
It also meant that Liverpool couldn't rotate this week. They couldn't freshen up their squad.
Yeah, they couldn't. But I also don't know if that was just the fact that they didn't want another embarrassment. You know, either way. But he could have, if he wanted to, played some of the young players who stayed on the bench, or, you know, squad players like Aspas or Alberto.
So Liverpool have Glenn Johnson and Lucas out, and probably bundles of others.
Sacco might be out.
Daniel Agger, Joe Allen.
Sissoko might be in.
Everton have quite a lot of injury problems
of
their own.
Well, let's talk about
Seamus Coleman is out. Sylvain Distin is probably going to be out. Leighton Baines has just signed a new contract, so that's good. Boost
Ryan
for them.
Brian Oviedo. Very, very out.
Very out indeed after that horrific broken leg. Mm. And so I hope he gets well soon.
Yeah. Barkley, De La Feo, you know, Pienaar. It's just a lot of...
Blimey.
There's a lot of injuries in key positions, because it just means they against West Brom, they struggled to put together the kind of intricate football that we had seen from in the first half of the season. It all kind of slowed down a little bit. It's just a shame that the two teams aren't coming into it at full strength.
Do you think this is going to be a little bit less of a whiz-bang fireworks occasion?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Suarez is playing, so he can still produce a moment of magic.
But. He certainly can. What do you think, John?
You never know with derbies, do you?
That's so true.
It's that kind of old, hoary old cliche. And Everton are usually so hard to beat away, and Liverpool don't lose at home. It has got kind of a draw that will satisfy and not really kind of please either side.
No, it is, because it's a crucial game in the race for the top four, a race which also features, of course, Spurs, who are level on points with Liverpool coming into this midweek series of matches. And boy, they've got a bit of a game on as well, haven't they, on Wednesday. They, John, are playing Man City. Only the same Man City team that beat them 6-0 at the Etihad, precipitating the whole AVB crisis.
Of course, yeah, it'll actually be interesting to see, having had this kind of flat FA Cup weekend, which Tottenham weren't a part of, and therefore had a weekend's worth of rest. We talked about the injuries that other teams are struggling with. Fulham changed 11 players with the game against Swansea in mind. If Tottenham go out and beat City, Which is possible if unlikely.
They did it last year. They beat them what, Jacob? 3-1 last year?
Yeah, it's called last 20 minutes.
No, there you go.
Well, I mean, if that happens, then it just adds a little bit more fuel to that fire of kind of the FA Cup being a sort of diminished competition.
The Europa League of domestic football.
It does really, yeah, and it's kind of unavoidable if that happens.
Mm, yeah, all right. Well, of course, Man City are looking awesome, but there's talk that Negredo might not be there, but if he's not there, they can always call on Dzeko, who got 4 in one game against Spurs, remember the year before when they 4-5-1, yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how Spurs approach this game, given that they were completely taken apart by City, about two months ago. And, you know, again, they were exposed against with a different manager against Arsenal a couple of weeks ago when they played a 4-4-2. And you wonder whether Shea might have learnt from that, whether you can play that kind of formation against the top side.
Consensus seems to be that he's got a little bit cuter tactically since then.
Well, yeah, because the game last week at Swansea where he did take out a striker and had a stronger midfield, and they won 3-1, didn't they?
But they're still unbeaten, of course, in the Premier League. All wins and one draw for Tim Sherwood. But this very much a test of his tactical nous up against extraordinary Man City, who I guess the question here is Man City's away form, which supposedly has now been sorted out, and it was just because they were a little bit complacent, and now they've got their heads together. But have they, Jacob?
Yeah, well, based on the stats they have, but you know, they haven't necessarily played teams from the around them away from home yet, and they lost to Chelsea away.
Yeah, the only big game they've had on the road was Chelsea,
and they drew with Southampton, who a top 10 side, and you know, the sides they've been beating away from home have often been down the lower, so we don't know yet how necessarily
we're going to find out.
Improved.
Super stuff. All right, we're looking forward to that and the Merseyside derby, and that's not the end by any means of the top fixtures this midweek, because there's also the likes of Man United Cardiff, and how about Chelsea West Ham? How about we have a little bit of music and then we'll dive into that. Chelsea, eh? Chelsea. What a start to the year they're having. Look, I've got the figures here. It's 5 wins now, and they've only conceded one goal in 2014.
And they're winning the transfer window by a mile.
Yeah, which is funny because it's a come-from-behind victory if they hang on to it, because they started off with the Matic 20-odd million for a player.
Yeah,
that they,
everyone was laughing at them, and now they're £22 million up so far.
Still a week to go, though, eh?
And he looked great. Against,
Matic.
Yes, in their match against Stoke. One of not many, that and Oscar's free kick, which was splendid, but in a game which was otherwise hypnotically bad as a viewing experience. I was kind of saying to you earlier, watching it, I was sitting in front of the TV and it was on, but very little of it was being absorbed because I was just in a trance. How bad it was.
Chelsea Stoke, who'd have thought, eh?
Well, Stoke were so lethargic. They just didn't seem interested in winning the game. So
perhaps they were.
Very, very ponderous in the final third.
But Matic was good.
Oh, yeah, he looked great. Yeah.
Super stuff. It's a special game, this, for the Hammers as well, Chelsea.
I'm going to it.
Are you?
Yeah. Can you tell me about Notcherino and Boreal?
Yeah, because West Ham come tooled up for this particular crosstown.
They come bearded up, is what they... Come with those two.
Well, yeah. Boriello, I'm not sure. Has he got a beard now?
Well, Notcherino,
last time I saw he had
does.
A. Notcherino yeah. does. Boriello had a kind of 1920s disreputable fellow moustache affair, which I thought suited him quite well.
Did he look raffish?
I think he did. He also often has his hair kind of slicked back. He's quite the matinee idol in his own mind, is Boriello.
Yeah, sort of Errol Flynn.
Very much so.
Role model.
Yeah. Errol Flynn had a way with the misses, and so too does Boriello. So, I'd love to bring you good news, but Notcherino has been supremely anonymous for the last year and a half. He had a great season, a breakout season when he came out of nowhere and then returned to it afterwards. When he played...
Was that 11-12 when he got into the Euros?
He was playing alongside or behind Ibrahimovic. And for whatever reason, whether it's because of Ibrahimovic drawing all the attention of the opposition off him, or just because he was lifted, maybe it was a kind of Ozil effect, that Ibrahimovic was having on him. He played brilliantly. Was bashing in the goals and was running around with loads of enthusiasm. Since then, he's been absolutely, anemic, anonymous, whatever else you want to call it. Borriello equally had a fantastic season years ago for Genoa when he was on loan from Milan, in which he was scoring all kinds of goals. So he's clearly got the talent. But I can only imagine that he's not quite focused on the game of football, something like that. There's some reason why he's never been able to reproduce that with any continuity. And he's been at Juve, the fans couldn't stand him there. He was at Roma, the fans weren't particularly bothered about him there. And I suspect that would probably be the attitude of Hammers fans as well.
I wouldn't be surprised if after five games people are sort of calling him lazy and, you know, because he's... I haven't really seen him play, but right. You just sort of imagine someone coming from Italy, maybe sort of struggling to adapt to the pace.
Perhaps so.
It doesn't strike me as someone who...
I mean, this is just my... It might be that they're both brilliant for you. I didn't think Coutinho would work at Liverpool. He had a brilliant start.
It's the kind of player that Allardyce has had sort of success with in the past, certainly.
Yeah.
At Bolton.
At Bolton.
And, I mean, you know, he, different kind of player, but he got Salgado in it. At Blackburn, which is something he's not really done at.
That's very true. That's very true.
So West Ham signed these pair of overseas stars in an attempt to stay up. Are we sure they've got all the paperwork done correctly this time around?
I don't know. Hopefully so, John. maybe Sean Bean can march on Parliament again, and you can get a doddery old lord to rule that one player can keep a team up.
Yeah. Super stuff. Big game this for Chelsea. Of course, they're 2 points off the top of the table. Man City have that tough game away to Spurs. Arsenal, top of the table. They're at Southampton. You know all about Southampton, Jacob. It's your second home, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or was that more last season you were always up and down the
train?
That
was more before Christmas.
Oh, all right. Arsenal have got Liverpool in the fifth round of the FA Cup. We'll talk about that when the FA Cup fifth round comes around. That's kind of mid-February.
Well, Arsenal have some horrible fixtures coming up. Because they're Southampton away, and then Palace at home, and then Liverpool away, Manchester United at home, Liverpool at home, and Bayern Munich at home.
That's right. In the space of 12 days, they have to go to Liverpool, host Man United, who've got Mata now, then they have to play Liverpool in the FA Cup fifth round, and then they're away to Bayern. All in less than a fortnight. And just cast your minds back, if you will, to... I think it was November, wasn't it, when they had three tough games in the space of a week?
December.
Was it December? Yeah. And by the end of the week, they were completely shattered and they went to... Was that not when they went to Man United and they lost? Oh, that was the City game.
Well, they
game,
had two. That happened twice to them when they won at Dortmund and then they went to United about 3 days later.
That's what I'm thinking.
They were a bit tired and lost 1-0. They didn't play their best at all.
No.
And then it happened again in December.
What we're seeing is there's a pattern here that when they have a series of tough encounters one after the other, they arrive shagged out at the final.
But they still came out on top of the league, though.
Oh, yeah, that's
still
true.
Still top. So,
table
doesn't
lie.
I was reading on the Arse blog today that because of the FA Cup draw, their tickets for their home match against Bayern Munich no longer fall under the umbrella of cup tickets that... you get as part of your season ticket.
Oh, I come. So, because that's now, that allocation's taken up by the FA Cup.
Apparently so. So
it's a bit sneaky, isn't it?
He's expecting there to be a bit of a palaver, media palaver about that as well, which may not help the Gooners.
No, it's going to distract the players enormously, I'm sure. Is this game at Southampton, is it one of those tough fixtures, or given Saints' recent record, is it actually a game that Arsenal should win quite handily? They've got Oxlade-Chamberlain back. He's against the club that made him. Oxlade-Chamberlain, John.
Yeah, the law of the X could be in full effect. Southampton remain one of those teams that when they put it together, they can be extremely, extremely dangerous.
Well, they were extremely dangerous pre-last time they faced Arsenal. They've only won, I think, two games in 12, Southampton.
Yeah, and Arsenal have only conceded two goals in their last eight matches.
Top stat, Barry.
Difficult to see them emerging from this game anything other than victorious.
Really, is that so? All right.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, 4-0 for Arsenal at the weekend against Coventry. Osvaldo, he won't be playing for Saints because he's been, well, frozen out.
Well, he's been suspended after that training ground ruckus.
Right.
And
he headbutted Fonte and broke his nose, is that right?
Well, he certainly gave him a black eye. I don't know if he broke his nose or not.
Fonte was on the bench on Sunday, so he probably didn't break his nose.
Okay.
And now apparently Juve, Fiorentina and Inter are all interested in bringing Osvaldo back to Serie A. And there was talk in the papers as well about him possibly being signed by West Ham.
It's an interesting sort of situation because sort of quite a few of those signings haven't necessarily worked out. They've made, and it's kind of been the players who've brought Southampton up, who have been formed the nucleus of the team. And
right.
There were some interesting quotes from Kelvin Davis saying that they didn't, you don't want anybody who's going to disrupt what is a very tight dressing room. There was, that someone was saying last week on the pod. I think it was Paul McInnes saying, that it's.
With the Swansea thing,
yeah. It's a similar. It kind of feels like a similar situation where you've got the new guys coming in and clashing with the old heads, as it were.
Their big signings haven't proved too successful, as you say. Gaston Ramirez is now out, and I don't think he's ever really.
Pochettino's not. They don't particularly see eye to eye.
Right.
Him and Pochettino. You don't have to read between the lines of what Pochettino says when he talks about Ramirez, who does have talent, but not necessarily a lot of application.
Right.
Wanyama's been quite good at times, even if he can't really pass. But Osvaldo scored 3 goals and hasn't really been able to form any sort of partnership with Ricky Lambert.
He's an incredibly streaky player, Osvaldo.
Well, yeah, but he's not really been here. He scored on his after
his streaks tend to run in seasons. He'll have a good season then, and
he scored 3 or 4 games in against Palace, right. Then nothing, then that great goal at City, and then another goal. I can't remember who it was against, but. He hasn't really settled in at all, and I remember Pochettino obviously had him at Espanyol, being asked early on whether he was worried at all about Osvaldo's record, clashing with teammates. Oh no, he'll be fine. He's a great player, and hasn't worked out that way.
Certainly hasn't. Well, anyway, so he won't be featuring that game. And Barry says that Arsenal are going to win. I'm going to move on to Man United Cardiff, which could be Matter's debut. It could be Matter's debut.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it almost certainly will be.
He came in a helicopter.
If he didn't.
Ride of the Valkyries playing. Yep. All that. Strode off. I like that. I think people should use helicopters more in transfers. In Italy, Berlusconi pioneered the use of the chopper as a way to ram your big money move down the media's throats. And I thought it was quite nice that David Moyes has been a little bit unassuming and a little bit meek, I think. On the Old Trafford bench so far, it was nice that he wheeled out the chopper for this one.
It'd also be more embarrassing for players when they got it wrong. Ah. So if Peter Odemwingie had turned up at Loftus Road in a helicopter,
he could have just hovered. it's a good point. Anyway, so he's there, and we.
It's also Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's return to Old Trafford, and
that's going to be slightly
overshadowed now by the presence of Matter. I'm sure he'll get a very warm welcome.
He can help United win again.
He's gone and signed Fabio.
He's got 2 players, because Zaha, I think, has that gone through now?
Not quite.
Wilfred Zaha?
Imminent, I think.
Oh, is it imminent? But Fabio has gone.
Yeah.
On loan, and as such can't play against United. Yes, because he's on loan. Kenwyn Jones, I'm reading, has also joined Cardiff, or is that imminent too?
Imminent, I think.
All right, so he's not going to be playing in this game. And Odemwingie is going the other way in the sense that he's going to Stoke.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see where Matter lines up.
Well, that's the big question, Jacob. Yeah.
Yeah, but is Rooney meant to be back or not yet? So there is clearly a spot for him behind the striker for now anyway.
It'd be funny if Rooney was suddenly fit now that he's got this mega deal.
And he's on, he's on the bench because they've signed someone else to play in his position, which is what happened with Van Persie last year.
What do you think about this deal for Rooney? Are these figures to be believed? I see The Guardian has an exclusive, as does The Times, I think one other paper, about how Rooney was invited to share the secrets of David Moyes' transfer strategy, which David Moyes, to be fair, has been sharing with everybody in his press conferences so far anyway. And Rooney is understood to have appreciated the VIP treatment without pushing the boundaries too far, is a quote from today's Guardian report. Fascinating.
Well, it was a privilege that was never extended to him by Sir Alex Ferguson, who told him to mind his own business.
Well,
when
supposedly
he
so, yeah. But is it really the kind of thing that makes you think, oh, I'll stay?
Well, no, it's money that makes him stay. I mean, there's a lot of talk that, if he stays, he could break Bobby Charlton's Manchester United goal scoring record, something which I'd say he couldn't give 2 hoots about. Ideally, and at his age, his biggest concern is making as much money as possible. As cynical as it may seem, but, he and his people sort of have the Glazers over a barrel and have developed quite a knack of extricating large amounts of cash from
American. How long is it since that last mega deal that took him up to about 225, 250?
It doesn't seem that long. It was 2 years ago, and a half.
Yeah. Not long.
And it's interesting that this sort of story is has leaked out now. In that, I mean, I'm just trying to think what's in it from the people that have been talking about it. Is it just kind of to reveal to the world how nice United are being to Rooney, so that it's public knowledge, and that therefore does that put more pressure on Rooney to sign this new deal?
Right. And what to make of United, who've been pretty parsimonious in their spending of late, suddenly extending this largesse to Rooney? Does that mean that they won't have any money for any of these other signings that Moyes is talking
about? Luke Shaw and Johan combined now bids for them
this window,
yeah, which, you know, would be two positions that they need to fill, certainly, central midfield and left back. So suddenly the Glazers are money.
If they had all this money, why wouldn't they spend it in the summer? I suppose you could ask, but that maybe is being
Weren't they trying to be too clever for their own good during the summer?
Were they? Well, I hate
their,
to do that.
Transfer dealings sort of came off the rails with Ander Herrera,
and the phony lawyers.
Yeah. It's all very strange.
Yeah, Ander Herrera and the phony lawyers. Good. Anyway, now it was 2-2 in Cardiff. He said, returning briefly to the football, 2-2 in Cardiff.
That was a game when Rooney kicked Jordan Mutch.
And
you're sort of looking at this today's stories as well, and you're saying that Wayne Rooney's going to be at some point expected to be Manchester United captain. You know, think of things like that and you wonder whether he is captain material.
Well, it's a big game for both teams. Man United are 6 points off the top four, yada, yada, yada. Cardiff, bottom of the table. But the way it's so tight down there, Barry, and believe me, it is tight. Let's see, all the bottom three are on 18 points and all the bottom six are within 3 points of each other. You know, a victory can see them flying out of the relegation spots, much like Crystal Palace did in the last round of action. Sunderland, who are only one place and a little bit of goal difference above Cardiff, who are they taking on? They're taking on Stoke. Barry, can we have a little bit of belated euphoria vis-a-vis your presence in the League Cup final?
Yeah, I was delighted with that. I didn't actually see it as it happened because I was attending to other media duties and I was just on Des Kelly's show on BT. When he announced that Sunderland won the penalty shootout, I couldn't believe it.
Oh, you didn't see the penalties go in?
No. I didn't see them till about 1 o'clock that morning.
Right.
I was out for dinner for my brother's birthday and I was trying to follow it on my phone. And when the penalty shootout was going on, I turned to my dad and said, "Oh, it's Sunderland 2-1. He went, "Oh, how many penalties are left?" No, they've won 2-1. That's how bad it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. But Jonathan Wilson was on a plane to Sri Lanka when it was taking place. So I think he went into complete shock when he got off the plane and saw the result.
Oh, what was he doing in Sri Lanka?
He is on a cricket tour.
Oh, okay, lovely.
He plays for an author's cricket team. And I think they got off to a very bad start. It sounds like
Sebastian Folks is on that team.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they're even worse than the English team. And their tours got off to a very shaky start.
All right. Where were you when Sunderland won the penalty shootout, John?
As I remember, I was at home listening to it on the radio.
On the radio? Yeah.
Shouting the scores to my other half upstairs.
Super.
Yeah.
Did she care?
She kept saying, "Oh, that's interesting."
Right. Anyway, well, Sunderland Stoke is the game this midweek, Barry.
Yes, it is.
You're 19th. For all your cup success, you're still only 19th.
Yeah. There's talk that Sunderland are bringing in an Argentinian midfielder called Ignacio Soco.
Oh, yeah.
Who plays for Internacional in Brazil.
Lovely.
And apparently Cardiff want him as well. Oof. But Sunderland are hoping that the prospect of playing in a Wembley final could, you know, swing it their way.
Absolutely.
And, he's had quite an interesting career. He's played for Newell's Old Boys, Pumas in Mexico, AK Athens.
Some great names there.
Where some fans blew up three cast canisters outside his house after he'd participated in a 6-0 drubbing that handed Panathinaikos the title.
If he has experience with Pumas, of course, Black Cats will come naturally to him. Anyway, so that's Sunderland Stoke. You feeling positive, Barry? Yay, nay?
Yay. Oh, yeah, right, we'll go yay. I mean, right. I'm not...
I tell you,
sometimes
so
they play so badly.
Yeah.
But If they win, Paolo Di Canio will take the credit for it, and if they lose, it'll be all John O'Shea, Lee Cattermole, and Phil Bardsley's fault. Right. He cut loose in an interview this weekend.
He certainly did.
Came out with his massive big blunderbuss, firing pot shots. It was quite entertaining.
Certainly was. Now, well, that's one of the relegation scraps going on. Sunderland Stoke, there's loads of others as well. You've got Crystal Palace, Hull. Hey, Hull have lost their last three in the Premier League without scoring a single goal.
I mean, if Hull lose this game, they're in trouble. And then you've the Villa-West Brom game as well, which, even though both sides are sort of... Villa are 10th, it's still a relegation
scrap. Yeah, how
scrap.
Are Villa 10th? That's one of the... They suggest there's some kind of, like, wormhole in the Premier League space-time continuum that
they're
they've
managed to...
They're
not that bad, Villa.
Are they not? No, every time I look at them, they seem to have done something awful.
They're not that bad.
Oh, they're not that bad. Okay, yeah, but they're
all good, but they're not that bad.
Oh, there are a lot of very, very
apparently
bad teams
so.
In the
West
Premier
Brom,
League.
Though, they drew that game against Everton in Pepe Mel's debut, so brave new beginnings for the Baggies there. But it's going to be a spirited affair, that one. And, of course, it's a derby, so form book out the window. Super. And Norwich taking on Newcastle, which is a derby, the derby of Crichton, of course. And Newcastle looked very good against West Ham last time. You probably saw that, Jacob, did you?
I did see that, yeah.
They yeah, what do you think? Are they going to go to Carrow Road and do the Canaries?
Norwich can sometimes be sort of quite difficult at Carrow Road. They're a weird side because they've got a lot of good players. Norwich, Snodgrass, Fair, Hooper, Redmond and so on. But Olsen on left back. But they're just sort of very rigid under Chris Hughton. I saw them on New Year's Day at Palace when they had about one shot, scored it and nicked a draw, but there was nothing inventive about them at all, and there should be because they've got good players, but they do seem to be able to grind out results.
Anyway, we haven't talked about Swansea Fulham. John, you saw Fulham. You saw Fulham this weekend. What's going to happen away to Swansea?
Well, I saw a version of Fulham.
Right, that's true.
I don't think any of the players that played at Bramall Lane at the weekend would be playing on Tuesday evening. Mm. Although what it did show is they've got some really talented young guys coming through the ranks. Muamo Tankovic looks like a proper talent. 18-year-old Swede, yeah.
Okay. I saw Fulham's under-21s play recently against Arsenal. And it's quite interesting because they're... you might see this come up in The Guardian in a couple of days. Their youth academy director is Hugh Jennings, who was formerly at Southampton when they brought through... who brought through Walcott, Bale...
Oxlade-Chamberlain,
maybe. Basically, the whole system was implemented when he was there at Southampton, and he's gone to Fulham. Their under-18s have won their title the last 3 years. The under-21s are top of the league at the moment, unbeaten, I think, and they've got a lot of good young players coming through there.
So. Wow! So a year or two more.
Yeah, might be talking about them in the way that Southampton were spoken about. Early this season.
Wow, it's quite a prospect, isn't it? But for now, it's a trip to Swansea where Boney's on fire. Good. All right, well, it's another big game that down at the bottom. Everyone's mute with excitement.
Well,
don't worry.
That's fine. Swansea might be getting Tom Ince from Blackpool.
That's also true,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
They haven't won any of their last eight.
Who, Swansea?
Yeah.
Really?
And there are rumours of dissension in the ranks.
Yeah.
That non-brick related set to between Chico Flores and Gary Monk.
No bricks involved.
In which there were no bricks involved. But apparently there might be something of a dressing room schism.
Oh, good.
Spaniards against the rest.
Bizarre.
Which, I think I said at the start of the season, as I said at the start of last season, completely wrongly, that Swansea might be in trouble. But I keep on
saying it, Barry.
Yeah, I'll be right at some stage. Yeah. But they are very much in trouble at the moment.
Right. They won this game with the reverse fixture 2-1, so you might feel this is where they'll win a game for a change. That's more than enough of that. The fifth round draw, we can talk about when the fifth round actually hoves into view in a couple of weeks' time. We'll have a quick bit of music. Here's some exciting news for John Ashdown and round up the big news from around Europe. John Ashdown. Here's Jay Spaceman, who posts in saying, John Ashdown missed out the best part of the halftime chipping the ball into the roofless shed game, sponsored by Wix. This was down at
Selhurst Park. That's where I saw it, yeah.
Yeah. The bit you missed out was that it was called On Me Shed Sun. Yeah, and if you like that, you're going to love this. They also did one where it had to be chipped into one of two baths, and they called it A Game of Two Baths.
That's not as good.
Do you not think?
That only works south of Watford, or wherever, well, south of Birmingham, doesn't it? Because otherwise it would be A Game of Two Baths.
Oh, that's why Jay Smaceman put in brackets, "This caused confusion at Northern Grounds."
Yeah.
Right, I thought it was a joke about not having baths or something. I wasn't sure. So I didn't read that bit out. I thought, that's a bit regionally discriminatory. Of course, Tommy 87 then comes out. He says, oh, that On Me Shed Sound was my favourite halftime show ever. For sheer comedy value, my second favourite was Coventry at halftime, where a punter would run around. No, where a punter would run around a flag at the centre spot until they were dizzy before stumbling forward 30 yards to hopefully miskick a penalty 3 yards forwards.
Yeah, I'm sure I've seen that. You have to put your forehead on top of the flag and then spin around it.
Yeah.
That's the technique.
Super stuff. All right. Well, let's dial up Sid Lowe in Spain and see if he can come up with anything as entertaining as that from this weekend in the Liga. Sid!
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, very well. Let me see. Got lots of things I want to ask you about, Sid. Of course, there was the Neymar fallout. We talked about that last week. No big developments on that, I imagine. No?
Well, I suppose not. I mean, there is in the sense that Rosset walked away, that Rosset blamed the jealousy of rivals who couldn't take the fact that they'd got the best players. The man who's come in is José María Bartomeu, who was his vice president, who's followed along a similar kind of direction, talking about jealousy from Madrid and so on, which of course is only partly true, given the way that this has unravelled. But Barcelona on the pitch, at least, are still playing pretty well. I thought they actually had maybe one of their best games of the season last night.
All right, 3-0 over Malaga.
Yeah, and very intense, very high pressure, created a lot of chances, very, very slick at times. Messi didn't score, though, so it means I think I saw the stat last. I think it's
120 days. 120
yeah,
days.
He scored in La Liga.
Well, he was injured for much of that, though.
Yeah, of course he was. I think it's a total of 5 starts and 8 games in total that he hasn't
still
scored.
For
still
him.
Quite a lot for him, though.
Yeah. So anyway, it's all still just 1 point between Barcelona Atletico, separated by goal difference, and Real Madrid. Now, speaking of Atletico, is it true what I read here? Chelsea have reached a verbal agreement for the purchase of Diego Costa for him to come along in the summer. Is that true, Sid?
Not as far as I'm aware.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying for certain that it's not, but not as far as I'm aware. Bear in mind that in the case of Diego Costa, it's a little bit complex because of the involvement of Jorge Mendes, and I'm not 100% sure, I must confess, about the ownership situation with Costa. Mm. There's also another thing that needs to be taken into account, which is the situation of Thibaut Courtois. And if you read between the lines, or maybe actually not even that much between the lines now, Courtois bit by bit is becoming a bit bolder in what he's saying. He's very clear that he doesn't want to go back to Chelsea if it's not to be number one.
Right.
So at some stage, that will need to be dealt with. Those two things could, in theory, go hand in hand.
Mm.
Diego Simeone said last week that, in a rather daft interview, but it actually got a really good answer from him, so I suppose in that sense it wasn't a daft interview, it was quite a nice way of doing it. Two TV presenters handed him a fake bag of cash, and they said $26 million on the side, and they said, would you spend this to keep Courtois? And Simeone said, yes, I would. I think he's really, really important, and whatever he costs, he would be cheap. And I think there's a very clear awareness that Courtois wants to stay, Atletico wants to keep him, but they haven't got that kind of money. So I suppose, how do you fund it? Well, you let someone take Costa in the other direction. This is hypothesis at this stage. Yeah. I'm not aware of this being something that's been confirmed yet.
Anyway, now moving along, Sid, moving along. Other reports in Spain, etc. stories include Roma signing Barcelona starlet Antonio Sanabria. Is he any good, and is that happening?
He's supposed to be very good, and this does look like there's a good chance. Not necessarily this particular deal, but certainly there have been a number of clubs interested. There's been no progression. The last time I saw, which admittedly was 5 or 6 days ago now, I think there's no progression on him potentially staying, and I think Barcelona have reached a point where they do fear that they're not going to keep him.
All right, okay. Ooh, and Fulham boss René Meulensteen wants to snap up Spanish attacking midfielder Sergio Canales on loan from Valencia. True or false, Sid?
True that Fulham have expressed an interest. true that Valencia would be keen to sell him, and true that Canales wants to play and right. is really, really keen to play. To the extent to which that will definitely happen, I don't know, but the three key ingredients certainly are true.
Okay.
Valencia have got a couple of players that they're trying to ease towards the exit, and of course get money back for them. By the way, Valencia stood in limbo because the deal to buy the club from Peter Lim has been ruled out by Bankia,
who
say they've got better offers.
Right, okay. Anyway, so Valencia might be in the mood or in a position where they need to ship out players
still. Well, they were doing that anyway, in the case of a couple of players, and Canales is one of them, but only if the price is good. And I'm guessing now, but I would say the price of Canales would be probably somewhere in the region of €10 million, I would imagine. I personally think Canales is brilliant, or at least I think he was brilliant. He's had two really big knee injuries, and I just don't know, because he's not actually playing as often as I would like him to. I just don't know if he's going to be that player again. But when he first burst onto the scene, he was sensational.
He's still only 22, so...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's time, but I just don't know whether... As I say, he's played so little for Valencia, and presumably the managers that haven't played him, who've been two or three of them now, have seen him in training and think he's not what he once was, or isn't, at least within that team, what he once was.
Jacob, Bundesliga's back.
Good.
It's tight at the top.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, Bayern Munich won. They came back. This was the game that supposedly was going to be a real test.
On Friday night.
Friday night's trip to Borussia Mönchengladbach. Mm. And, they won that 2-0.
Yeah.
And all their rivals either drew or lost. Good. So they're now 10 points clear with the game in hand.
Götze scored, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah,
2-0. And so what else do you have? Second place Leverkusen lost 3-2 at relegation-stricken Freiburg, which bounced Freiburg out of the bottom three. Dortmund, meanwhile, had a bit of a dough moment because Jean Donwan, who'd come from Sunderland, of course.
Yeah, strange.
Yeah. So he went to Dortmund and they loaned him to Augsburg. Augsburg, who were flying high in the top of the table.
Did he not go to Augsburg, who then sold...
No, he went to Dortmund,
24
who loaned
hours
him
later.
To Augsburg, and he came on and within, I think, 120 seconds, scored against Dortmund, his parent club.
So they can...
You can.
Yeah.
In pretty much all of Europe, you can. It's just, I think, the Premier League where you can't. And the other bad news for Dortmund in what turned out to be a 2-2 draw with Augsburg, which has once again hampered their ability to get back into the very top positions. Blaszczykowski... He's out for the rest of the season. He's done his cruciate. So they are in all kinds of trouble, Dortmund. They went away, as all pretty much all the big German clubs did, to the Middle East or to somewhere mild over the Christmas break. And they came back full of talk of having recharged their batteries and recommencing the league push in earnest. But it's not started well. The Draxler story... your guess is as good as ours, listener, because some people say, yeah, any day now, they'll say no. So, probably there'll be more by the time we get this pod out.
You were on TV with Herr Honigstein last night. Did he have anything to say about it?
No. It does seem that Arsenal have made an offer, and it does seem that Schalke haven't accepted that offer.
The papers this morning seem to be of a consensus that Arsenal are sending men with briefcases to Germany today.
Yeah.
To negotiate with Schalke. Bayern Munich obviously are sniffing around, but Schalke would presumably rather sell him to Arsenal.
You'd think. In France, while the title race looks done and very much dusted in Germany, France, look at this, it's sprung back into life because PSG almost lost to tiny Guingamp at the weekend. It was a header from Alex, I think 3 minutes from time, which earned them a 1-1 draw. But they dropped 2 points there. Monaco won, so it's now only 3 points between PSG and Monaco. And Monaco actually hosts PSG in 2 weeks' time. So
Monaco let Traore go in the end as well.
Yeah, surprisingly, even though they lost Falcao. But without Falcao, they had a big game on Sunday night. They played Marseille, and they still beat them handily. They were completely in control from start to finish. Super. And just Italy to finish off. Bit of Italy.
Yeah, I see AC Milan got out of jail, left it very, very, very late.
Yeah, they've done that a lot this season. They've scored, I think, 13 goals in the final 15 minutes of games. This was a classic example. Cagliari had taken the lead through an awful mistake by the keeper, Marco Amelia, afterwards they said it was a wind-assisted or a wind-hampered goal, but he basically passed it to a defender. The defender passed it straight back. And then he passed it again straight to one of the Cagliari forwards who... who laid it off to Marco Sao, who came in and dodged a couple of players, did very well, and finished it. And then Milan were trailing 1-0 for ages and ages and ages and ages and ages. And then Balotelli scored a terrific free kick. And then Pazzini, who's now back from injury, had a pretty special Ibrahimovic-esque sort of... got his foot up to about shoulder height, managed to hook the ball in.
Yeah, he got in front of two defenders, didn't he?
And, the great celebration after, because this is very much a cathartic liberation moment. So he's running off doing that, pointing at his own eyes, Pazzo celebration thing. And then he tumbles to the ground and all the Milan players jump on top of him. And then bizarrely, on the replay, you can see his Kaká comes up and he's lying there on the ground with, I think, Honda next to him. Honda's corner had basically set him up for this, and Honda actually played quite nicely, a lot of nice back heel passes and stuff. Anyway, basically Kaká comes up, grabs a bit of grass, starts sticking it in Pazzini's mouth. Pazzini can't move, and Kaká's just trying to push these blades of grass in his mouth. I have no idea what it means, but there's obviously some significance to this for Milan. But anyway, yeah, they won, and that's now two straight wins in the league, so good stuff for them. But Juve did not win. They had Buffon sent off, which means he's going to miss next weekend's big Juventus-Inter game. Roma won 3-1 against Verona, so that's now only 6 points the gap at the top of the exceedingly tight Serie A table. That was very interesting, wasn't it? Anyway, there you go. Anything else anyone wants to talk about before we conclude today's Football Weekly? John?
Can't think of anything.
You, listener, anything?
Producer Ben just said, please no, in my head.
Did he?
Yeah. I don't know.
Right, okay. There you go then, listener. Hope you enjoyed that. I know we did, and there's another one on the way on Thursday, looking back to all the midweek delights. Do join us Thursday. Bye for now.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.